Oh? I nodded. Sure did. Sarah managed to tackle me onto one of the green squares. That was a clever move. I didn't expect it at all. Sarah winced, shaking her head. I could understand why. Marissa still wasn't in here. Which meant we'd won the match. I let out another cough, and another Phoenix Division student approached me a moment later. Any injuries? I pointed to my chest. Coughing blood. Might be my lungs. That's not good. Hold on. The student put a hand on my forehead, closing his eyes and concentrating, then let out a sigh. Your lungs are fine. You just bit your tongue. I laughed, letting out a sigh of relief. Thanks. You might want to check on Marissa when... Marissa appeared unceremoniously on a nearby bed. She gets here, I pointed. Patrick gave her a couple electrical shocks. I'll check. It took a few more minutes for each of us to get a thorough check, as well as a few healing spells. The menders were perplexed when they got to Sarah. Miss, you seem to have quite a bit of mana scarring. She knows, I answered for her. We're looking into solutions. I'm honestly not sure this is treatable, the student replied. He definitely needed to work on knowing what not to say to people. Sarah's expression had already been sour, but now it was quickly turning toward depressed. Don't worry. We've got some leads on how to take care of it. I turned to Sarah. I looked some things up, and I'm going to be doing more research later. I'll tell you at home, okay? Sarah nodded silently, but she didn't turn to look at me. Marissa stood up, walking over to put a hand on Sarah's shoulder. Can we head on out? Just wait a few more minutes. The professor will want to tell you how you scored. We're getting scored immediately? That's unusual. True to their word, Teft appeared a few minutes later.
Well, that was a unique match, at least. Teft folded his arms. Marissa and Corin's team won, as I'm sure everyone expected. You shouldn't feel particularly proud, however. That was quite a debacle right at the beginning of the Matchmaster Cadence. You almost managed to turn a nearly insurmountable advantage into a defeat by taking so long playing with your toys. I'm not finished. Do not interrupt. Regardless of what you almost did, the result was that you learned how the tiles worked. Against most opponents, that would have given you an even greater chance at victory, and may have been worth the investment. But I fear you underestimated Miss Cadence.
Sarah looked up, blinking.
She took every bit of information that you gained and learned it by watching you. If she was in fighting shape, you would have been defeated soundly and most likely without contest.
I started to open my mouth again. He raised a hand.
I said do not interrupt. I'm lecturing. You will listen. My greatest commendation must go to Miss Callahan, both for her individual combat abilities, which remain in the top of our class, and the ingenuity to cut out a tile and use it as a weapon. This was an excellent example of teamwork, as was the use of levitation, which I suspect was Miss Cadence's idea and Master Wayland's implementation. In light of all these factors, Miss Callahan receives a grade of A on this test. Master Cadence, you contributed to your team's success, but leaned heavily on Miss Callahan. You would have failed without a team member as skilled as her. I begrudgingly offer you a B for managing to discern and properly utilize the functions of the tiles.
He turned to the other two.
Master Wayland, you carried much of your team's weight, but you also failed to eliminate either member of the opposing team. Your general combat prowess was above average, but you were not able to apply it in a way that neutralized your enemies. You receive a C-. Miss Cadence, you might have rivaled Miss Callahan if you were able to fight properly. You made a choice to fight in spite of your disadvantages, and it was the wrong choice. You were not ready. You will receive a D, which is lower than what I would have given you if you had chosen to withdraw from the test. This is not low enough to expel you from the class, but one more of them would be. We will conclude the final exams with a second battle of this type next week. I will offer you a similar choice. I hope that next time you will make the correct decision for your circumstances. That is all. I have more teams to observe, so there will be no questions today. You may come with questions next week before your second matches. Your next opponents will be better prepared. You should ensure that you are as well.
And with that, Taft spun on his heels and left the room. Sarah managed to make it home before she cried. Chapter 4. Restricted Attunements. After Sarah rushed up to her room, the rest of us sat down in the main living area. Derek was reading a book when we arrived.
Huh, she's in a hurry. Something happen?
We explained the situation.
I could punch Taft for her,
Derek offered, helpful as usual. No, Derek, I suspect that would only complicate things further. I shook my head. And she doesn't blame him anyway. She blames herself, probably mostly for dragging Patrick's score down.
Oh, it's not that big of a deal,
Patrick waved a hand dismissively.
We'll just do better next week.
She won't see it that way, Patrick shrugged.
She's a great student, though. Always has been. Even if we get kicked out of this class, we can still graduate. It's an elective.
Just graduating would never be good enough. And if she caused someone else to fail a class, I don't think she'd ever forgive herself. Patrick laughed.
She did fine. You guys just did better.
He stretched his arm.
Mara, you've got a mean punch.
At least you had a shield to help with that. That lightning aura went right through me.
She shivered.
Maybe less of that for sparring in the future.
He blinked.
Oh, sure. Didn't realize it would hurt that much.
Derek leaned over.
New lesson, Patrick. Lightning hurts people. Considerably.
Patrick scratched behind his head sheepishly.
I'll keep that in mind.
Was a good trick, though. Almost had me.
Marissa grinned.
Thanks?
Patrick blushed a little.
Right. Back to Sarah, though. Corin, you should go talk to her.
I pointed at myself. Me?
Yeah, obviously. You're her brother.
Sure, but I also was on the team that just beat her.
All the more reason you should talk to her,
Derek offered.
If you're right about how she thinks, seeing Patrick again will probably just make her feel worse.
Maybe. Or maybe it would help if Patrick told her he didn't care.
Eh.
Either way, I was overruled, so I stood up.
Fine, fine. I'll go talk to her.
I headed up to Sarah's room. The door was closed, so I knocked. She didn't answer, but I could hear her quietly sobbing inside. And coughing a little, too.
Sarah, it's Corin. Can I come in?
I knew she couldn't verbally tell me to go away, so I was making things a little awkward. Eventually, she opened the door, still wiping her eyes. I offered her a handkerchief, which she accepted and used to wipe her face and nose more effectively. Then she put on a stronger face, folded her arms, and stared at me expectantly.
Can I come in?
She stared a little harder. She wasn't going to make this easy.
Sorry, Sarah, I'm no good at this. I've never been good with emotional stuff in general.
I paused for a moment.
Not really sure what to say. You fought fine back there. Would have beaten us hard if you had your spells, and it's not your fault you lost them. You saved our lives back in that tower, no question. We'd be dead if you hadn't summoned Seiryu.
Sarah turned her head away, letting out a sigh.
I mean it. And I know you're suffering right now, but it's not your fault, and we will find a way to fix this. It doesn't sound easy, but I've already been doing some research, like I said earlier.
That got her to turn her head back toward me, tilting her head up to meet my eyes. Then she twisted her lips, turned, and gestured for me to come into her room.
Thanks.
I came in and sat down on a chair next to her bed.
You want to hear about what I found?
Sarah sat down on her bed, wiping her nose again.
Okay, I'll fill you in.
I summarized everything the researcher had told me about her situation.
So I'll read the book about the mountain. If I think I can handle it, we'll go ourselves. If it sounds too dangerous, I can ask Karis or Derek to handle it. If the flower doesn't work, we can look into some of the other treatments she mentioned. Since my new attunement involves life mana, I might even be able to learn healing magic myself eventually and treat it directly. I'll start looking into that. She listened patiently, but got up when I'd finished and grabbed a sheet of paper to write a reply. Flower will take too long. We fight other teams in a week, and they won't go easy on me like you did. I can't keep dragging Patrick down or whoever else they pair me with.
I didn't go easy on you. She tilted her head downward to glare at me. No, seriously. I was focusing my effort on figuring out how the runes worked. That not only helped me figure out the safe tiles for this time, but now I have a better idea of how they work in general. I can probably figure out the functions at a glance next week. Or for any other similar tests we take. I doubt they made that arena just for this. She wrote again.
Fine. If you really spent all that time on purpose, I won't argue. But most enemies won't give me that much time to maneuver before they start fighting, and I have no advantages right now. I can't even use the sword Katashi gave me. Not that I know how to use it anyway.
Okay, so you need something quicker. That's fine. I'll dig into alternate options. But Patrick doesn't blame you one bit. He said so earlier. You need to stop worrying about this. You're injured. We'll heal you. Plain and simple.
She gave me a grudging nod, then hesitated before writing one final word. Promise? I didn't like the idea of making promises without all the relevant information, but it seemed like an achievable goal, and I needed one of those. Maybe more than she did.
I can't promise I'll find a perfect solution. I don't know enough about it yet, and it wouldn't be fair to you to make a promise I don't know if I can keep. But I'll do more research, and from everything I've heard so far, it sounds like a solvable problem. And I promise, I'll try to help you solve it.
Maybe it wasn't the traditional platitude that she'd been looking for, but it was what I could offer her. And looking at her expression after that, I think it helped. I hadn't given her false hope. From the expression she gave me afterward, I'd given her something a little different. Resolve. We'd beat this together. I even gave her a hug. It was easier to have physical contact without panicking if I initiated it.
So now that the hard part is over, I just have the easy part of figuring out how to heal nearly incurable damage in a week.
I started with the most logical place I could think of, but that had some dangers of its own.
I have questions. I set the wineskin, filled with the last remnants of the water from the attunement font, down on the table in front of Professor Vellum. Vellum didn't look away from the apparatus she was working with, some kind of distilling tool. Maybe an elixir still? I'd seen one before, and this looked subtly different. It had a larger chamber on top, and the collection chamber was metal instead of glass, but it was potentially a variant design.
And I have answers for thee, if only ye answer me these questions three.
I rolled my eyes.
Ask away, O Ancient One.
She cackled.
Why are you bothering me in the middle of an experiment, child?
Well, I have a rather unique potion here, and I think you might be interested.
Potions are not unique, Corrin. They're merely ones you haven't grown familiar with yet. Now be silent and watch, and I will inspect your precious, unique potion when I'm finished.
As it turned out, she wasn't merely monitoring the still. She reached over to an empty crystal container on the left side, opened her palm, and a sliver of solid crystal dropped into it. Then she grabbed the flask, added a tube connecting it to the larger apparatus, placed a metallic holder below it, and opened her palm again. A flame, near identical to the ones I'd seen from alchemical burners, emerged from her hand.
Is that an elementalist spell, or are you—
Quiet!
I shut up. I watched the glass. The crystal within shimmered and changed. I'd been guessing she was trying to evaporate it from a semi-solid state like ice. I was wrong. The crystal changed, but not into vapor. It turned orange, glimmering brighter, and began to smoke.
The compound that I'm brewing is colloquially referred to as dragon's breath. This is nonsense, of course, because dragons are non-existent, but it does burn quite impressively.
I desperately wanted to ask more, but I waited patiently. After a few moments, she pulled her hand away, slipped a metal insert between the crystal chamber and the rest of the still, and then disconnected the flask from the rest of the apparatus. With that,
She whispered a word, and the metal insert wrapped around the top of the bottle, creating a complete seal.
The smoke is not terribly dangerous on its own, but it is best not to take the risk of breathing much of it. The smoke I released into the chamber now makes its way into the condensation chamber.
She motioned to a globe on the top of the apparatus,
where it mixes with other components, takes on a liquid state, and gradually drizzles into the destination flask.
She pointed at the metallic container I'd seen before.
Mixing fire essence directly into the compound causes the herbs to combust, but the smoke trapped within a primer of enhancement essence can be slowly introduced into the rest of the compound without adverse effects. Except, of course, if it is exposed to air.
I couldn't help myself.
And if it is, it combusts naturally. There are a number of explosive alchemical compounds, but this is among my favorites. Can you guess why?
Without knowing the other materials, I didn't have a lot to go on. Except the name and her own personality. It's really extraordinarily impressive looking?
Vellum chuckled.
Quite so. I'm using it as the basis for developing new fireworks for the Winter Ball.
The ball? Vellum was going to the ball? Vellum must have caught my expression. She set the flask down, waving a hand dismissively.
I'm not too old to dance, child. Nor am I too old to collect a tidy profit from selling the patent for this particular formula to Eldritch Engineering.
She paused deliberately.
Your best bet in mana products, guaranteed.
I stood frozen for a moment before doubling over with laughter.
Okay, Vellum, you win. That was good.
Of course it was. I'm bloody brilliant. Now,
she waved at this flask.
What's that you've got there?
I waved at the apparatus.
Are you already done with that?
Not by a long stretch, but I can't add the next ingredient for another hour. Now answer my question.
Oh, right. Question 3 from Ancient Thee. Yeah, I found that in the tower. During my judgment, just before getting my attunement, I waved at it. Because drinking that type of liquid is how I got my attunement. She shook her head once.
No, it's not.
I blinked. Pretty sure it was.
Allow me to educate you.
She walked around the table, lifting up the potion. She glanced at the runes on the side.
Preservation glyphs. At least you have some sense, limited as it may be.
That was the nicest thing she'd ever said to me. I do try to be somewhat prepared, at least.
Oh, yes, I know. Never quite in the right ways, but you certainly try.
She unstoppered the potion, sniffing at it, then swishing it around.
Not much left. I'll run a simple test to confirm my suspicions, but it will only take a few drops.
Her tone brooked no argument, so I just nodded. She handed me the potion, then went and retrieved 2 tubes filled with clear liquids and set them up next to each other in a rack. Then she retrieved a potions syringe, a needle and chamber tool specifically designed for extracting bits of potions, and drew a bit of liquid out of my potion. She distributed 1 droplet into each of the tubes on the rack, frowning as she observed. Nothing happened. After a few moments, I raised a tentative eyebrow, but nothing changed. Vellum nodded to herself, lifted a hand, and a tiny spark of flame brushed up against one of the vials. The liquid inside shimmered and turned crimson. She moved her hand to the other vial, focused, and the glass began to freeze. The water within shifted to a deep cerulean hue. Vellum lifted one of the vials, inspecting it more closely.
It is, of course, what I expected.
Meaning? She slipped the vial back into the rack.
Meaning what you have is an attunement primer solution.
And that is?
Vellum sighed.
Something you shouldn't have. But since you somehow managed to stumble upon it, now it's merely something you shouldn't use. An attunement primer is used to ready the body to receive an attunement. It does not carry an attunement itself. No potion does.
But then, how
magic?
She waved at the vials.
Specifically, the primer reacts to magic. It's the catalyst for a reaction that, when a proper spell is used, forms an attunement in the body.
Vellum pointed at the crimson vial.
Expose the primer to flame, and the grey mana in the solution becomes flame mana, saturating your body. A proper attunement-granting spell contains the specific domi, or mana types necessary to form that particular attunement, as well as instructions for the mana to take the proper shape.
She paused, mumbling. More of a ritual, really, given the complexity and material components necessary.
I folded my arms. Wait, you're saying someone casts a spell to create an attunement? I understand that artificial attunements might work that way, but I don't remember anyone casting a spell. I remember drinking the fluid, then a vision. Was that a hallucination? Or did someone, or something, cast a spell on me?
The voice, Tristan, had some kind of entity that was talking to me. Did he cast something on me? Or was it some kind of enchantment on the basin?
When he put that rusted sword in there, he pulled Selyse Leanne out. Maybe the sword was repaired by the water, or maybe he withdrew a completely different weapon. Either way, the basin itself was enchanted.
Could that be what the true source of my attunement was?
Vellum shrugged her shoulders.
I know everyone wants to believe the goddess just gives them to us, but even goddesses have methods. That method happens to be infusing us with liquid, then activating the liquid with a complex spell that creates an attunement.
I waved at the vials.
And what happened there? I take it you didn't attune the water?
No, just basic spells to test the liquid's reactivity. I'm afraid I can't attune a liquid, though that would be quite a good trick. A large part of what forms an attunement is the mana already within your body. It's simply being reshaped by the primer and the spell.
I frowned. And if you happen to drink some, if you already had an attunement?
Let's see, shall we?
She found the syringe again and withdrew another droplet. I mourned the loss of a little more of my potion, but it was worth it to see the results of the experiment.
Vellum dropped a single droplet into each vial.
Again, nothing happened. Until she flicked an electrical spark toward the crimson vial, and it burst apart, sparking liquid dripping and flowing across the table.
The primer remains isolated until it is exposed to any spell effect, at which point it changes to the appropriate type, often with unpleasant results.
I stepped back to avoid the flow of liquid.
And if the spell effect isn't the right type to create an attunement,
it would simply flood the body with that much mana of the types used in the spell.
How do people earn second attunements, then?
Very carefully, Vellum chuckled. Whoever or whatever falls in the tower grants the attunements would have to strip all active spell effects off the person to prevent them from triggering the primer, then isolate their existing attunement somehow to prevent that mana from flowing into the primer and triggering it.
And, hypothetically, if someone didn't go through that exhaustive process?
She pointed at the broken vial in the puddle of liquid.
Oh, Sarah, I'm so sorry. I frowned. But that still doesn't exactly match with what happened to you. You didn't explode?
What are you thinking about, boy? You did something, didn't you?
She folded her arms and glared at me. It was an emergency?
Speak.
My sister Sarah may have drank some of the fluid, but it didn't explode. Her attunement changed.
Vellum's brow creased.
Changed?
I showed her the drawing.
Oh, dear. What attunement did she have before? No, don't tell me. Summoner, yes?
How did you know? Is that some sort of advanced summoner attunement?
Vellum shook her head.
No, it's just that summoner is the only local attunement that involves persistent spell effects inside the user's body. That would be what triggered your potion. Her contracts. The primer reacted to a contract spell, fusing it with her existing attunement. The primer contains tremendous mana. It's enough to remodel how the entire body functions when guided by the proper type of spell.
I winced. And somehow the contract fused with her attunement?
An apt explanation for a foolish act. You could have killed her. If she hadn't been a summoner and someone had hit her with an offensive spell next, the primer would have enhanced that spell.
I shuddered at the image that followed. It was a risk, but we needed the power. It worked, for a time at least.
Oh? And now?
Now she can't speak, and her safe mana capacity registers at 0.
Quite fascinating. Well, I hope you've learned a valuable lesson from destroying your sister's life. Off you go!
I stoppered the potion again and tucked it away. You're not going to ask about—
I don't get involved in the foolish endeavors of youth. If you say you needed that kind of power, fine. You can believe that. Next time you'll find a mysterious potion of great power, ask an expert before anyone drinks it.
Well, consider me sufficiently rebuked. I nodded.
I will, but would you happen to know any way I can help with my sister's situation now that I've made my mistake?
Vellum sighed.
I can't change an attunement once it's been made. I doubt anyone can, at least not yet. Believe me, I've tried, and so have many others. Amenda may be able to help her with the side effects, and she may be able to earn a second attunement if she can regain enough use of the first to survive a judgment in another tower.
She paused, considering.
If the spell that changed her mark is a contract, you should determine what type of contract that was. That may give you a way to address the problem. Perhaps if it was a tie to a specific entity, that being would still be able to transfer mana into her. Or alternatively, breaking the contract might restore the attunement to something resembling normalcy. It may require breaking all of her contracts, given that it's possible they all activated the primer at once.
I furrowed my brow in consideration. How can she break a contract without using mana?
Vellum shrugged.
Ask a summoner.
Thank you, Professor. I'm sure she'll appreciate your insight.
She'd better. And you'd better too.
She waved at the broken vial.
You can start by cleaning that up. Then you're going to mix me a replacement potion.
I sighed and got to work. I didn't go back to tell Sarah what I'd learned. Not immediately, at least. I hit the library first, and then the archives and the divinatory again. On the way in, I saw someone leaving the restricted archives that I didn't recognize. She looked to be in her 20s and wore an all-white business suit. More interestingly, she had purple hair that trailed all the way down her back. Hair dyes weren't that uncommon, but I did admire the particularly spectacular shade that she'd chosen. She glanced at me as she passed, raised a single eyebrow, then kept walking. I waited until she was out of the hall before entering the restricted archive. I didn't find any books specifically on mana scarring, but there were plenty of books on general human anatomy and healing magic. I asked researcher during my visit, but she didn't have any books available on my new attunement. There were some general books on attunements that had sections on restricted attunements, though, and I grabbed a couple of those. It'll be interesting to see what information they have on other restricted attunements, and it's far past time I get familiar with the whole list of foreign ones. I didn't plan to memorize every attunement out there right now, but I wanted to find any other ones that looked like they had a good chance of being able to help fix Sarah's condition. I also asked researcher for more details on the types of attunements that were being used for studying how to heal mana scars here in Velia. She didn't know, but she gave me the name of the researcher she'd heard about, Sheridan Theus. The name sounded like all sorts of problems. There was basically no chance Sheridan wasn't related to Allura Theus in some way, and Allura remained at the top of my list of potentially deadly enemies. Then again, if this gave me an excuse to visit with members of House Theus, maybe I could finally get some information. I liked that idea. Once I had all the books I wanted, I brought them back to Derek's manor. I went to give Sarah the news, but she wasn't there, so I checked with Derek.
Patrick convinced her to go take a visit to the campus hospital.
He ran a hand through his hair.
I doubt it will help, but she seemed to want to do something, so I don't blame them for trying.
Derek was probably right. If Katashi couldn't heal the problem outright, a random mender at a hospital probably couldn't either. Then again, Katashi had thought Ferris had a better chance of fixing the problem. That implied that the Visages had different skill sets. Our legends said that the Visages had the abilities of every attunement, but that didn't mean they were equally powerful with each of them. And if they were equally powerful, maybe Katashi just wasn't as knowledgeable about every subject. This could be an issue of finesse and creativity rather than raw magical ability. Since Katashi represented concepts like justice, and if his skills matched, I expected he was probably better versed in attunements geared toward enforcing law and maintaining order.
Ferris was the visage of creation, so it was logical for her to be more specialized in things like manufacture and repair. I figured healing fell into that latter category. I took a seat nearby. I agree that it's unlikely Amender could help. I did do some research on people who are working to treat mana scars locally, however.
Oh?
Derek raised an eyebrow. Yeah, and I came upon a name I wanted to ask you about. Sheridan Theus? Derek recoiled as if struck. That was not a good sign.
Sheridan Theus, you say?
His frown was deep enough that I could have used it to tunnel to the other side of the planet.
I take it you know her? Or him?
Either or neither, he waved dismissively. Usually neither. He shook his head. Denny takes after their patron. I knew what that meant.
You saying that Sheridan is a follower of Wid?
Follower would be too light a term. More like disciple. He sighed, putting a hand to his head.
And yes, Denny would be a good candidate to talk to about mana scars under normal circumstances.
I took a few mental notes there. First, apparently Sheridan had a nickname, Denny. Second, if Sheridan was usually genderless, I'd have to try to remember to call them by neutral pronouns like they, unless they asked me to use a gender. That was the polite thing to do. Third, based on Derek's last point, I had to brace myself for being told that Sheridan was working with Tristan and Alora. I asked for clarification anyway.
What's the problem?
Denny and I have had a somewhat sordid history. I folded my arms. More sordid than your history with Alora? And I take it they're related? He sighed.
Siblings. I've known them both since childhood, and, well, things happen.
I had to cover my eyes with my hand for a moment. Derek was just too ridiculous.
Okay, so you've had some issues with both Thea's siblings. Would that be a problem for getting Sheridan to talk to Sarah?
No, he sounded hesitant.
But you may want to worry for other reasons.
Oh?
Denny is like you in a sense, attuned directly by one of the visages with a restricted attunement.
That sounded great, actually. It just gave me another reason to want to meet them.
Why would that be a problem?
They're a necromancer. I blinked.
You're joking. Those are a myth.
He shook his head.
Not a myth. Forbidden knowledge, and, with Wid being the visage of forbidden knowledge, they occasionally give chosen disciples access to it. Doesn't work like you're thinking, though. No raising skeletons to run around and butcher the innocent. It's mostly interacting with spirits.
I contemplated that.
Huh. That's a little strange, I'll admit, but it doesn't sound like a problem. It's a serious problem. Necromancy is, more than likely, how Denny could help your sister. But what necromancy can do and how it works is forbidden knowledge.
Meaning that Sheridan wouldn't be allowed to use it to help?
Meaning that, knowing Denny, they'd only offer to help under specific conditions. One would probably involve Sheridan taking Sarah somewhere alone, depriving her of her senses, and trying to fix her under conditions Denny controls. You don't want that.
I considered that.
No, you're right, but it's not my decision. It's Sarah's.
Wouldn't be wise right now.
Denny and Alora don't always get along, but if Alora asked Denny to grab Sarah and take her somewhere to make you cooperative...
I nodded. I was going to ask if you thought they were working together.
Denny was the first person I investigated. I doubt they're directly involved, but I do think that if you put Sarah in Denny's hands, she'd be in potential danger.
I scratched my chin. Do you think Denny would agree to other terms? Maybe erasing our memories later?
Doubt it. Memory erasure is unreliable at best.
I could mention that I have Katashi's favor.
Might help, but it probably wouldn't be enough to convince them on its own. Too much risk for just a nebulous favor that might or might not be applicable.
I considered that. How much trouble would they get into if Wid figures out Denny used necromancy in front of us?
No idea. Especially since you have a restricted attunement yourself.
He sighed.
I'll make the arrangements for Denny to come visit, but it's going to be up to you to figure out something of sufficient value to offer. And I'm not talking about gold.
It'll have to be something unique enough to be compelling.
Unique, eh? Something came to mind immediately, but it wasn't an option I liked. Was I willing to give up the Jaden box? My best chance of being able to have a physical meeting with Tristan? For a chance to heal Sarah?
Give me a day or two to talk to Sarah about it, and we'll come up with something.
Derek grimaced.
All right.
I'd better go write them a letter now before I lose my nerve.
Thanks, Derek. He waved a hand dismissively.
Least I can do. If you hadn't gotten that ring off my hand...
Derek shook his head.
I still don't like to think about what might have happened.
Appreciate the help regardless.
He headed toward the stairs.
Don't thank me yet. Denny is one of the most dangerous people I've ever met. There's a good chance you're going to regret this.
When Patrick and Sarah got back from the hospital, Derek and I filled them in on what I'd learned. I considered not telling Patrick about the whole necromancer thing. He didn't really need to know, but I was tired of keeping secrets from my friends. Nothing good came of it. When I told Sarah about what Vellum had explained to me, she seemed interested. She wrote me a quick note in reply. I don't know how to release my contracts without using incantations, but I'll read up on it. Maybe we can check with a diviner to confirm Vellum's hypothesis, too.
That sounded like a good plan.
I asked her about what they'd learned at the hospital. As we'd suspected, the menders at the hospital couldn't heal the damage. The doctors mentioned that Sarah could seek out an emerald-level healer of some kind and see if they had more knowledge, but they didn't know of any. There was some mention of surgery, but Sarah wasn't willing to take the risk of making the problem worse. The one new piece of information that came out of a more complete investigation was the extent of the damage. Sarah's lungs weren't the only thing that was scarred. She had scarring all the way up her trachea and throat. That, not the mana scars on her lungs, was what was keeping her from talking. That meant we had two different problems to solve, but it seemed to make Sarah feel a little better. The trachea and throat scarring was still going to be difficult to treat, but it was somewhat easier to handle with healing magic than lung damage. The doctors still didn't have the expertise to treat that on the campus, but they gave Sarah a list of names of doctors that she could see about that type of surgery. While that was safer, Sarah still wanted to find a different approach, if possible, since the recovery time would apparently be weeks or months, even with magical aid. Also, throat surgery sounded pretty terrifying to all of us.
You really mean it? They're a real necromancer?
Patrick was positively gleeful. I doubted he'd have been any happier if I'd given him a magic sword. Which I still intended to do. Eventually. Patrick's enthusiasm made me smile in spite of my nervousness about the whole situation.
Yep, sure are.
I turned to Derek.
Did you get a reply?
Of course. Denny said they'd come by in 2 days. You've got until then to come up with a really good story and most likely an even better gift. Denny collects sources of forbidden knowledge, so that might be a good angle to consider. If you can teach them something they don't already know or give them an item made with forgotten techniques...
Forbidden knowledge, eh? I knew exactly who to talk to. I found Karras playing a game of Crowns, apparently against himself. I'd grown up playing Valor rather than Crowns, but I was familiar with the game. It wasn't as popular as Valor, but some people enjoyed the fact that each player chose a different set of pieces. The asymmetrical nature made it more engaging for the comparatively small number of players, but it was much harder to learn, and the unbalanced teams made it less suitable for tournament play. At the moment, Karras was sitting on the left side of the table, holding the Katashi piece. He looked to be debating using it to take one of the tyrant's sons off the opposite side of the table. I didn't know for sure, but at a glance, it looked like the tyrant's side of the board was winning. He looked up as I approached and set Katashi back down on the board, presumably in the same place he'd been before.
Corrin, care for a game?
I considered that. I'd like that, but maybe you could help me with something first? The swordsman nodded.
Sure, probably. What do you need?
Oh, not much. I was just hoping you could teach me pre-attunement era sorcery. He blinked.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean.
I wasn't sure if he was being evasive or honestly didn't know.
You haven't told me about how exactly your magic works, but when I mentioned Rin Jaden, you said you knew her. She's what we call a pre-attunement era sorcerer, meaning she used magic in the days before the goddess gave out attunements. That kind of magic isn't supposed to work anymore, but I think it's what you're doing and why you're so powerful.
Karras shook his head. I'm not like Rin. Not exactly, anyway.
What are you, then? I think Patrick's guess was ancient wizard king, more ancient than time.
Did he really say ancient twice in there?
I laughed.
He did. Is that seriously your only objection?
Obviously not.
Wizard king is far too lowly a title for one such as me. He could have at least used God Emperor.
Karras rolled his eyes.
But no, I'm not anything like that. Sorcerer is a good word, though. That's what we call magic users where I come from.
Now I was getting somewhere.
And can you teach me?
He shrugged his shoulder.
I did say I'd teach you a few things, but I was thinking more in terms of fighting techniques. I don't think teaching you sorcerer's theory would do a lot of good.
I took a seat opposite from him.
Can I politely disagree? Being able to use magic of any kind without an attunement would be tremendous.
That's just the problem. I don't think you can. I could explain all the rules of sorcery as they were explained to me, and I doubt anything will come of it.
He paused.
Why do your people think this pre-attunement era sorcery disappeared?
I knew how to answer this one. It was something I'd studied before taking my judgment, hoping to find a way to gain power without an attunement.
Like many of the things I'd researched, it had amounted to nothing useful.
At least until now.
There are a few prevailing theories, if they could be called that. Really, the first one is more of a legend. Some people say that before the Exodus to Caldwin, the tyrant in gold stole magic from humanity as a way of securing his eternal rule.
Karras nodded.
And other theories?
Other theories believe we just lost the secret of how to use it, or perhaps it was tied to the land we were on before the Exodus, and it can't be used here.
Another theory is that our bodies have changed over time for any number of reasons, and we no longer produce enough mana to cast spells on our own.
I took a breath, thinking, before I continued.
A popular theory in Edria is that the goddess altered us deliberately so that only the worthy could use magic. Thus, magical power would be a sign of greatness and the goddess's affection. I've always suspected it's more like Hadrix described, however.
Hadrix?
In the treatises on ancient magic, Hadrix noted that older works often refer to external places of power that we may no longer be able to access.
Karras tapped his fingers on the table in what might have been an affirmative.
The minions.
I suspect that's part of the problem. Might be fragments of other truths in some of the other ideas, too.
Might be?
Meaning you don't actually know?
He shook his head sadly.
My sorcery, or magic, as you call it, works just fine. And yes, some of the abilities I use draw from what we call dominions back at home. From what I've gathered from talking to others, I'm confident that your bodies are different from people where I come from. And that's probably why you can't use that kind of magic. I don't know what caused that difference, though.
That's still something we can work with. If our bodies are different, is there some kind of magic that could force a change that would let me use these dominions?
Probably, but that's not the kind of magic that I use. Even if I knew how, though, it would be dangerous and probably come with disadvantages. My people don't use attunements. I'm not sure if they could use attunements. I've seen things that are similar back at home, but they're nowhere near as complex, and they don't seem to alter mana composition to the same extent as an attunement does.
That made me lean toward the explanation that our body changes were deliberate, at least at first. But then I realized it was also possible that attunements were developed as a reaction to people losing their magic. That did lead to an important question, though.
How common is your type of magic where you come from?
If you mean dominion sorcery in general, not uncommon. I haven't exactly taken a census. If I had to guess, maybe 1 in 20 people knows a bit of magic. More in cities with universities. Virtually anyone can learn it, but people tend to have talents for different types.
Types?
Oh, yeah. Sorcerers draw from different dominions. There are a lot of them. They correspond to mana types, as well as what you'd consider to be combinations of mana types. So things like flame or lightning.
Most people only learn one or two, mostly because those are the ones they have enough natural energy in their body to get started with. It's possible to learn more, but it's harder for ones you're not predisposed toward.
That sounded really intriguing. If people where he came from could use magic from birth, without any sort of arbitrary tests, that sounded far better. Except for the people with no magical talent, I supposed. Maybe there was something to that Edrian theory that the goddess changed us so magic could be earned?
How do you use your magic? What makes your body different from mine?
He waved a hand.
I'm not a good example for a lot of reasons, but let's talk about a typical sorcerer. Our world is saturated with energy from other dominions. It's all around us, just impossible to perceive without the right kinds of sorcery.
He paused, seeming to think about his words.
Let's say we're talking about a flame sorcerer. His body is connected with the dominion of flame, and it's like a stream that he can reach into. He can pull out fire with his hands, shape it, and throw it. But a little bit of his own fire gets used up in the process, and that flame is what keeps him warm, so when he uses flame sorcery, he gets colder.
I blinked.
How much of this is literal and how much is figurative? Figurative stream, figurative reaching in, literal cost. Using flame sorcery actually costs body heat.
Huh. That's not appealing.
That's one of the easy ones. You really don't want to use life sorcery. Anyway, that's the basic idea. As the sorcerer uses the stream more, he gets more skilled, learns to grab more fire at a time, making him more powerful. When the flame in his body recovers, it comes back stronger, too, so he can use more and more as he acclimates. Unless he uses too much. It's just like exercise. If you do too much, you hurt yourself.
Attunements work similarly, I added.
Similar in that regard, yes, but your magic is very different in other ways.
He scratched at some stubble on his neck.
If being a sorcerer is like using your hands to gather water, an attuned is more like someone who has a bucket in the middle of the stream. The bucket is always filling up. When it gets too full, it overflows a bit, and then you've got a shroud. An attuned can reach into the bucket, but not into the stream.
That analogy made sense, but it did pose a question.
If we didn't have any mana to start with, I could see why we couldn't use the stream the same way you could. We couldn't pay the cost. But let's say I'm getting mana from my attunement, and it's flame mana. Why can't I reach into the flame stream?
Maybe it's because the attunement isolates that mana from the rest of your body, so you can't use it the same way? Honestly, your guess is as good as mine on that. I'm not an expert on how attunements work. I will say this, though. I think the monsters around here use magic the same way that I do.
Now that got my attention.
It answered some questions, and it raised a whole lot more.
Okay, what if I had mana floating around in my body that wasn't in an attunement because, say, I drank a potion I definitely shouldn't have?
Karis frowned, considering. Are you talking about Sarah?
I nodded. I don't know what exactly happened to her, but her attunement isn't working properly. If it's leaking mana, could she use some of that mana through your type of sorcery?
Might be worth trying. I'd be willing to give her some lessons and see if we can make it work. It'd be tricky, though. Most people first learn how to use sorcery through speech. There are other methods, but they're more advanced.
I'd appreciate your help regardless. And I'd like to observe the lessons, too. My new attunement gives me a degree of ability to transfer mana into others, so maybe there's something we could do with that?
Might be worth a try. One important thing I need you to think about, though.
Hmm?
If this type of magic was deliberately taken away by your goddess, she might not be happy if it starts showing up again.
That was a good point. I'll be discreet, but I do want your permission to tell this to one more person.
As long as it's just one of the people here, I'd be fine with that.
I shook my head. Not them. Derek just arranged for someone to visit us that might be able to help Sarah, but I need something to trade.
And you were thinking information? Not a bad idea, but I'd rather you find another option if you can.
If it is possible for your people to relearn sorcery somehow, it could be the type of thing that has an impact on your society as a whole. I'm not sure you want to tell that to just some random person.
They're not exactly random, but
Considering who it is, you're probably right that I should be careful.
Who are we talking about here?
Their name is Sheridan Theus.
Oh, lovely. Another Theus.
He shook his head. I thought I'd left them all back at home. I paused for a moment. There's a House Theus where you come from?
Yeah. They're pretty prominent there, too. So is House Hardigan, for that matter.
I knew House Theus and House Hardigan were ancient, but I didn't realize they still had branches on the mainland. That was strange. Most stories involved whole families being shepherded to Caldwin by the goddess, never to return. Had some people been left behind? Or just gone back at some point? That was something else I'd need to add to my ever-growing research list. At least I was finally making progress on one of my other research items.
Okay, Sheridan Theus. Karis considered that. What's he like?
They, I corrected instinctively.
They?
Karis looked quizzical. Sheridan is a follower of Wyd, and takes after them.
I've heard of Wyd, but I have no idea what you're talking about.
I paused, momentarily stymied. It was hard to remember sometimes that, much like I didn't know much about Karis's culture, he didn't seem to know much about ours either. This was the kind of thing our culture usually explained to children. I had to think about how to explain it in a way that didn't sound like I was talking down to him. Okay, so Wyd is one of our visages. The visage of forbidden knowledge.
Sure, I've heard that much.
Wyd is legendary for constantly changing. Sometimes they're old, sometimes they're young, sometimes they're male, sometimes they're female. Karis seemed to consider that.
Like some sort of trickster god? We have legends like that back at home.
I think most people would find that comparison unflattering. In part because of the whole heresy of talking about other gods thing, and in part because this isn't about trickery. Wyd isn't changing shapes to trick anyone. They're changing because they feel differently at different times, so they change their form to adapt to their self-image. Karis shook his head.
Sorry, I didn't mean to offend. That's just very different from what I'm used to. So this Sheridan is, what, a shapeshifter?
No, I don't mean that Sheridan changes their form in an anatomical sense, although I'm sure many people who take after Wyd would love to, though, and there are a couple attunements that can do that sort of thing. This is more about identity. For someone like Sheridan, they prefer to be male sometimes, female other times, and neither at other times. I paused. It's also probably worth noting that there are people in Velia who consider themselves male and appear female, or vice versa. Or just don't think of themselves as being one or the other.
Karis seemed to ponder that. Neither? Like an elemental or something?
Might be a good comparison. I don't know. I'm not really sure about how elementals view themselves. I imagine it varies.
It does, Karis replied with a surprising degree of certainty. Okay, so physical appearance is largely irrelevant here. That's sort of refreshing, actually.
I wouldn't necessarily go that far, I winced. Racism, for example, is still alive and well. We're just not too picky about whether or not people are male, female, or neither. Men can inherit just as easily as women in Velia, for example, but Edria is somewhat more complicated in that regard.
Fascinating. I appreciate the lesson, and I certainly wouldn't want to offend the Sheridan or anyone else like that. And, now that I think about it, I suspect I've met a few others that are similar.
I'm sure you have. Taking after Wyd, or one of the other visages, is pretty common here. We're predominantly aspectist, meaning that the visages are considered aspects of the goddess by most people here, and that means a lot of people worship the visages directly.
Karis cracked his fingers. I'd figure that part out. It's a little strange to me, having met some of the visages personally, but I've always had a strange relationship with religion in general.
I'd be interested in hearing about that at some point. This might be an inappropriate question, but are you related to the tyrant in gold somehow? Or another foreign god? Our legends say they were all wiped out, but
Karis sighed. That's complicated. Suffice to say that I'm not one of the tyrant's children, or otherwise related to him like that. If anything, I'd be considered one of his enemies.
As for relationships with other gods, I'm afraid that's not something I'm comfortable getting into with you just yet. Nothing personal, but it's the kind of information that could get me in trouble. And as you know, I've already got plenty of that.
I nodded. Okay, that's fine. But can I ask you another, slightly sillier question?
Karis raised an eyebrow.
Sure.
What's with the mask you wear whenever you're outside?
Karis laughed. Oh, that? Magic item.
I suspected that, but I didn't sense an aura on it. That didn't mean much, though.
Karis's magic clearly didn't operate in the same way as ours in general.
What sort of magic item?
Concealment. It makes it harder for people to recognize me unless they already know who is under the mask. It also makes it harder for divination spells to find me, which is the main reason I wear it when I'm out.
Why aren't you wearing it right now, then?
The wards on Derek's house serve the same function. I'm no expert at divination, so I don't know if the house's protection is as strong as the mask's, but honestly, wearing that thing all the time is kind of irritating. Hard to eat with it on.
That was a little more mundane than I'd expected, but it did raise other questions. Why bother with something like that? Is there a reason you need to be in disguise?
Karis sighed. It's related to your earlier question. I'm not working with the Tyrant, but he does have agents here, and I would really rather not run into them if I can avoid it.
I blinked. Why? I imagine some random Tyrant-worshipping cultists wouldn't be a threat to you.
I'm not talking about Tyrant cultists. Although the faithful of the Golden Sovereign could be a real problem if they continue to spread the way they have been. I'm talking about the children of the Tyrant and their direct servants.
Are you implying that some of the Tyrant and Gold's children are here? On Caldwin?
I'm not implying it, Corrin. I've had the misfortune of running into a couple of them. They're the primary reason I wear the mask.
I did not like the sound of that. Are they as powerful as the legends say?
I've read some of your legends. You've heard the one about Ayara stealing a bow and arrow from one of the visages?
Sure, but I wouldn't call that one a legend. That's from a fiction series.
Karis waved a hand dismissively. Doesn't matter. The point is that the book ended with a battle between Ayara and Caribas, with Ayara fleeing into the night.
Been a while since I read it, but I'll take your word.
I've met Ayara, and I've fought one of your visages. It wasn't Caribas, and the visages aren't all going to be the same level as fighters, but Katashi wasn't exactly a non-combatant. My assessment? If Ayara chose to fight one of the visages seriously, that visage would be dead. No question.
I felt a chill run down my spine. Okay. Good to know.
Not all of the children of the Tyrant are as powerful as Ayara, of course. She's one of the two strongest, so it may not be a fair comparison. But there are many children of the Tyrant, and I wouldn't put the least of them below an emerald. If you see one, you run the other way as fast as you can.
What about you? How would you fare against one of them?
He shrugged a shoulder. Depends on which it is. I wouldn't take the risk of engaging any of them without a dire need. Killing one would risk bringing more children here, or drawing the attention of the Tyrant himself.
Is there any way for me to know if I've ever seen one of them? Don't they just look human?
They do. I haven't found any trick to it.
He paused, considering.
They do tend to have false names that follow a couple specific patterns, though. People who work for Ayara tend to adopt names that start with S. Sterling, Silver, that sort of thing. Ones who work for the Blackstone use gem names.
I nodded at that. Karis reached up and pointed at his back.
Their servants often have an enchanted tattoo on the back of their right shoulder. I'd keep an eye out for those, and run the other way if you see those too. Anyone who is a prominent enough servant to have a mark like that is probably going to be citrine or emerald level too.
What do you mean by an enchanted tattoo? Do they have something like an attunement?
A dominion mark. It's the equivalent on the continent I come from. I'm not familiar with any other marks that are quite as complex as your attunements, though.
Does that imply that they have some kind of artificial attunements over there? Or does the Tyrant give out attunements in the same way that the goddess does? That's all sorts of terrifying if he can.
I'd be very interested in hearing more about those. Maybe at some point.
Not today, though.
And it would be connected to learning more about Dominion sorcery in general. You'd want a strong foundation before you start thinking about marks too much.
Fair. Okay. Can I ask you to start some sorcery lessons with Sarah and myself tomorrow? We can try a few experiments to see if she can manage anything.
Sure. But I wouldn't get